Welcome to Nourish and Shine, where I talk with passionate leaders in the fields of nutrition, functional and integrative medicine, and wellness, providing inspiration and practical advice to nourish your mind, body, and spirit, optimize your health, and live a whole vibrant life starting now. So excited to be here today recording episode number 20. It is such a special episode, and I have had so much fun along the way recording this podcast. I continue to learn each and every day with each and every episode, and every guest has been amazing and inspirational, and I'm so grateful that they took the chance to be on this podcast. I am so excited about our guest today. Vanessa is perfect for the 20th episode because she is a huge inspiration to me and someone that I really look up to. I mentioned it a few times during the episode, but I totally love her podcast, Feed Your Wild, and her work on her website is incredible. I highly recommend checking out her wildlyrooted.com website, where you can find so much information, and she even has a course that we'll talk about during the episode. I have to read you her mission on the website and a quote. She says, "Her mission at Wildly Rooted is to get to the root and remember the soul back into healthcare and life. Our intention with Wildly Rooted is to build a community where we share wisdom from our ancestors and wisdom keepers, the latest scientific research, real life experience, intuitive guidance, and nature herself that is not only health promoting and regenerative, but rooted in the practical so we can implement it in our daily lives and grow corn, as they say." I think Vanessa is just so full of wisdom and really brings it all together, mind, body, and soul. This episode is super expansive, and I think it's just one that you need to take in and be willing to open up your mind to so many possibilities. I hope you love this episode. And again, I'd love to hear your feedback. Welcome to the Nourish and Shine podcast, Vanessa Rodriguez. I am so excited to have you here. She is a functional nutritionist, intuitive nourishment guide, and host of the Feed Your Wild podcast, which is one of my absolute favorites. Thank you so much for being with me.
I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, absolutely. Could you tell our audience a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. So my name is Vanessa. And as you said, I'm a functional nutritionist and intuitive nourishment guide. And most people ask me, what does that really mean, intuitive nourishment guide? So I think we'll probably get into it much more today in depth. But essentially, I support clients and listeners and groups like through my work, through the podcast, and also just clientele that I'm seeing one-on-one, and patients through doctor relationships in helping them to nourish themselves. What does that really look like? So that's why I love that I'm on this podcast, because this is my jam. But really looking at what does nourishment mean, and through a functional nutrition lens, obviously using more of the clinical nutrition approach and looking at, you know, lab work and your actual diet and the food you're putting into your mouth. But the intuitive nourishment piece is really also looking at what are all of the quote food aspects in one's life, that food that feeds your mind, your heart, your soul, not just your physiological body, and helping you to understand what is intuitively best for you, like what really nourishes you, and also my own intuitive abilities and helping one navigate that. Because sometimes, as I know I experienced this, I'm sure many of your listeners have, where you feel like you're not accessing your intuition. You literally, there's like a fog or a wall between that inner compass and yourself. And so it's just about helping others to be able to access that information when they can't, and then help them to be able to access that again.
Oh my gosh, I love that. And there's so much there I want to unpack.
Yeah.
First of all, I am dying to ask you, and I usually end with this, but you brought up nourishment. And let's talk about, what does nourish mean to you?
Oh man, so many things, so many things. I feel that nourishment is, it's almost like in a lock and key type of thing, where with each thing that comes in that nourishes you. And so for me, nourishment is really just everything, like I mentioned, that feeds all aspects of yourself, and really having, I have this understanding that we are multifaceted beings, and we have different bodies. We have our physical body, our energy body, our soul body, and we have different types of food that nourishes each of those bodies. And when we can bring in the right kinds of those foods into our life experience and into our bodies, then it begins to unlock certain things within us that we already came on this earth embodied, holding, kind of like these seeds. And as we feed these seeds and nourish, just like imagining you have this garden and you, there are seeds in there. Well, I mean, they're not really going to flourish unless you have pretty good soil, or maybe there's the elements of the sun and the water. And before even the sun, just being able to sprout and root out, we really need that nourishment from the soil and the proper environment. And so looking at all of those aspects, I call that our sacred ecology, looking at our life as a as an ecology within our bodies, within our inner ecologies of our mind and our soul, and looking at our outer ecologies, looking at our community, looking at our relationships, like all of that stuff needs to be fed certain foods in order for us to tap into our true potentiality. And so being able to do that, it's almost like this natural unfolding that happens when we really nourish ourselves. We can develop into our fullest version of ourselves. And that's really my mission here. So I know that's a really big answer to your question around nourishment. But that's what nourish and nourishment really means to me, is being able to tap into that and bring in those special foods, that those keys that allow us to do that.
Oh, that is probably the most beautiful answer I've ever heard.
Thank you.
And I completely agree. And I love the term sacred ecology. I think that is so spot on. So in terms of actually doing this and kind of finding those foods that are right for our bodies, is that where the intuitive nourishment guide comes in? And if so, could you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. So it can. And I feel like everybody, you know, has their own journey. And the people that I see, they're coming to me at different points of their individual journeys. So some people I feel like have, I mean, they've like years and decades of this journey with actual food, like real food, and trying to discover what is right for them. Other people, it's not so much about the food piece, but it's really about cultivating the nourishment in these other realms, like we talked about energy and soul body, and that allowing the food that they are eating to do the job. Because some of us may have experience where you feel like you're literally eating all the right foods, you're doing all the right things, but you're not seeing the dial shift. You're not seeing the changes that you desire. So then it requires us to do a little bit more digging. And that's what I typically do with, in terms of the intuitive nourishment piece. The way that I utilize intuitive nourishment, like when I'm working with somebody, I'm an intuitive, but I also use the Akashic Records, and we can talk about the Akashic Records too. Yes. I know we're going to get into wormholes here, which is, I'm all about it.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So essentially, I'm able to receive some information, like bits of information that I deliver to the person whose record I'm reading. And we can ask specific questions related to blocks, or maybe even related to food and what's going on, and just being able to receive messages more on that soul level. And then of course, when I'm working with someone, especially I work with a lot of folks who have chronic disease, we also are going to be looking at the biological aspects and the physiological aspects. So, you know, we could do some functional lab testing or working with their doctors and looking at what might be missing that is in within the food realm, and then just helping them to navigate what is right for them. Because I have found in my personal practice that there isn't one diet that works for everybody. And even for that individual, it may shift depending on their age, where they are in their journey of life. There's a lot of other factors. So it's just helping to guide or help someone navigate all of that.
Totally. And I love how you connect to like the science and spirituality piece. And have you always done that, or how did you get interested in that?
Yeah. Well, I feel like I was always, personally, in my personal life, I'm a very spiritual person. And my family background, my family's from Puerto Rico, very Catholic, but I feel like Catholicism out of the like Latin American and tradition, but most specifically the Caribbean, is very different because there's a mix of other cultures in there. So, and which are a lot more maybe earth-based or even a lot from coming in from Europe, like spiritualism. There's also Santeria. So a lot of the stuff coming from Africa with the slaves. So it's like this really unique mix that's then all integrated within Catholicism and the practice of that. So while I was going to church, right, growing up and did all the things, and I grew up in Chicago, doing all of the quote like standard Catholic things that one would do as a kid, my family also incorporated more indigenous practices and other spiritualism practices. For example, doing baños, which is like bathing with herbs and making concoctions, like making these remedies to rub on your skin, allowing not just the herbs to help, but also like the spirit of the plants. Or I remember my grandmother talking about how they used to participate in seances. And I know a lot of people are like, whoa, that is like so not Catholic, right? And that gets kind of out there. But that's just like a little taste of, you know, the little things that we've been exposed to, my family, my siblings and I, throughout our childhood. And so spirit, like God, was always a big part of my life, and like prayer and having altars and stuff. But, you know, you kind of get away from that as like when you start to carve out your own life and journey. And so I was always super into science, like more mostly physics and biology and the body. I was a dancer. And so I was very much interested in that. And I didn't actually go to school for anything scientific. I studied international studies. I actually didn't know what I wanted to do when I was in college and growing up. But what happened was that my mom got really sick with breast cancer. And this was when I was in college. And that was like a tsunami that just hit us, my entire family, because we had no history of breast cancer in our family before. Now, knowing what I know, that's the usual cases. Most cases of breast cancer, there isn't that much family history actually involved. Mm. But we didn't know that. And I am a researcher at heart, so that got me digging and digging. And this was early 2000s, so this was like 2003. I would say 2000, 2001, maybe. And so there wasn't a whole lot online. I feel like now you go on Google and there's just like, you're inundated with so much information. And at that time, it required a lot more digging. So I started to find out a little bit more about food, and I got interested in all of these sort of more peripheral dietary theories that were considered alternative, and then looking at alternative practices for my mom to support her while she went through the conventional therapy. And then eventually, when conventional therapy stopped working, I mean, not that it worked for a little bit, and then she got the breast cancer back, and then it was this whole saga, and her doctors basically told her, there's nothing else we could do for you. And that's when my parents, obviously not having any other choice, they were like, all right, turn to their kids. And we're like, you know, what did you guys find? What can we do? And so that really opened up this whole world of nutrition, functional medicine, just integrative medicine in general, but also alternative therapies that even today might be considered fringe, although I feel like we've come a really long way. And I got hooked ever since. And so for me, the nutrition piece, the nourishment piece was really the one thing that I knew I wanted to stick with. So I went back to school, I did all the things. And so that's how I got into the science piece of it and really studying in clinical nutrition training and schooling. But all the while still, you know, doing my own personal spiritual things and also my own personal journey. So I feel like several years later, my mom ended up actually passing away. So she journeyed with breast cancer for 6 years. And that, I mean, for anybody, that's such a huge tragedy, right, in one's life. But also it was like this catalyst for me, this catalyst that like gave me permission to live my life how I wanted. And I don't know if we can swear on the podcast.
Sure.
But I was going to say give no fucks anymore, you know, because I feel like I was very much a people pleaser. And I wanted to go down the straight and narrow path, do all the things like the good girl syndrome. And I saw how that was really holding me back. And so having that experience and then also experiencing actually like my mom, she would come into my dreams. There were several moments when I actually felt her and in my waking life, like there's some stories around that. But anyway, it started to open up my awareness to the fact that there is so much more beyond this world that we can see, touch, and feel with our physical senses. And that curiosity led me deeper into my own inner journey with my spirituality and my intuitive gifts, which I feel like, first of all, everybody is intuitive. Everybody. And I think it's a human trait to have various kinds of intuitive gifts. And so if you desire and you have this call or this like curiosity that's pulling you, follow it and you'll start to see how that gift opens and blossoms into something that you didn't realize you had the capacity for. So I just kept on with that journey. And then eventually I started my practice, which was really starting with health coaching and nutrition and functional nutrition. So didn't really incorporate a lot of the spiritual piece. And after working for clients for years, I started to realize how, at least the clients that were coming to me, right? Because I feel like I don't know if you found this to be true, but like a lot of the clients that came to me were reflections of myself. And almost like they were calling me to whatever they were going through was calling me to step deeper onto a path that was part of my journey. And a big piece of that was incorporating the spiritual aspects into my work and that they shouldn't be separate. And so I started to play around with that. And eventually in my own path, I started working with the Akashic Records personally for years before I started working with clients doing them. And once I started to work with the records with clients and just open up that intuitive piece, it changed my practice completely. And I feel like also just the way that I practice, and it continues to do so. So yeah, that was a long-winded answer, but that's kind of how it unfolded.
Oh my gosh, what an amazing journey. And thank you for sharing your story about that. It's so incredible. And so let's talk about the Akashic Records. I know you have an amazing episode on your podcast all about, I think it's Akashic Records 101, right?
Yeah,
which is so good. And I totally listened to it. And I actually did an Akashic Record reading with you, which I loved. But for people who are not familiar with Akashic Records, can you talk about what that involves? And also, how do you bring that in with the other pieces like you were talking about?
Yeah. Well, so I'll I'll speak to what they are so people can maybe get a little bit of understanding. It is very esoteric and kind of out there. So I encourage you, you know, if this is coming in and it's kind of like, I'm not really understanding, maybe re-listen or just like set it aside and come back to it. Because I find that sometimes multiple times of exposure can deepen our understanding of something, even if we can't cognitively understand it at first. And that's how it was for me, for sure. So the Akashic Records, according to my understanding, and this is how I was also taught, is this vast energetic database, if you will, that holds the vibrational imprints of your soul, your soul's history, and your purpose in this life. So your soul has sort of like this blueprint, this fingerprint, and all the different lives that you might live through this same soul are recorded within the Akashic Records. So we can think of it, now we have all of these really wonderful metaphors that we can use. For example, thinking of it as the ultimate iCloud or the universe's supercomputer or like Google, where you have an inquiry and you can plug in and search for what it is that you're looking for because it's being held in this vibrational space. And this is something that it's not new. This it has a lot of different names throughout history and various cultures. Some of it, some call it the Book of Life. But if you were to imagine like this, you know, the choose your own adventure types of books where it's just like co-creative. You're creating it as you're going. And that's kind of what the Akashic Records really are. There's a lot more to the Akashic field. And when I'm talking about the Akashic Records and the way that I use it, I'm looking at this library, so to speak. So where the information is being held. But there's a lot more beyond that that I won't get into today. But there's a lot of known philosophers and mystics that have talked about the records or utilized them. So just to name a few, Nikola Tesla, Alice Bailey, Rudolf Steiner. So, and probably the most famous psychic, Edgar Cayce, he also accessed the Akashic Records for information. So it's really just, if we were to imagine this universal field that we can plug into, and Akasha in Sanskrit means cosmic sky. So it's referring to not just space, but to like higher spheres of interconnected life and existence. And the Hindus saw Akasha as this cosmic source of all that there is. So there's a lot of this throughout various lineages and cultures. And so it's like this collective field that holds our memory. And because it's beyond... So, okay, now we're going to get a little meta if we haven't already. It's beyond space-time. So here we are embodied in this life, and we have to live according to the laws of this life, which is there's time and there's space. And so the Akasha is beyond that. So because it's beyond linear time and space, we can access information that was from the quote past or the quote future, although it's not a future telling tool. Like I'm not... When we think about, you know, psychics or like telling your future, that's not the way that I operate or use the records. And I don't believe that we actually can, because everything is, you can change your life, right? Like you have maybe a destiny, but you can change the way you navigate your life. So I don't really believe in telling the future. But of course, if you're going on a certain path and you're following patterns, then we can see where that might take you. So that's kind of a little bit about the Akashic Records. And so the way that I use them in my practice is usually when someone feels like there's more to the story than just their food or just, you know, the supplements or the medical things that are going on. There's more to the story. Maybe there's some blocks, maybe there's some soul level pieces that need to be looked at. Maybe there's some stuff from like past lives that are helping to facilitate a certain experience in this lifetime. So that's where we can then use the Akashic records, tap into them. And when we tap into one's records, it's really just looking at that person's soul records. I do this through a sacred prayer process that I was trained in. There's a lot of other ways that you can access the Akashic records. At this point, I feel like everybody can access the Akashic records if they really wanted to. And so seeing it as sort of open source, right? This information is there to support us in our healing journey, in our journey within our life experience to become like who it is that we really are, you know, that unfolding that I was talking about. So
amazing.
That's a little bit about it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just incredible. And I would say after talking with you about the Akashic Records, I just felt like a really deep sense of peace. Like it was neat to know that there's so much more out there, right? And it kind of blows the lid off, like the superficial, like just basics of everything. And it's just so expansive. And I don't know how else to explain it, but an amazing experience. So one question I kind of have is for people just learning about this and that are like, wow, I really want to be able to tune in and like, you know, how do I start hearing my guides? How do I start tuning into my body? What would you tell them? Or what are a couple of tips about that?
Yeah, well, first is that curiosity, which is so important. Curiosity killed the cat kind of thing. I'm like, you know what? Maybe curiosity killed the cat like after the 1,000th time it did something it wasn't supposed to. But general, I feel like one of our best tools and practices is following our curiosity and how that will help lead us to trust ourselves more, which will then support our connection to our intuition and to information that is maybe beyond this world. And so the two things that helped me the most in doing this is number one, following that curiosity and just trusting the process. Like if something comes into your mind, if you feel like something is a sign, beginning to pay attention, it's huge, like opening up these spiritual eyes, so to speak, and just paying attention. So it's different than like searching for a sign and grasping. It's almost like you're just opening up this window so that you can begin to actually see what is out there for you. And then you can start following it. The other thing that has been really helpful for me is meditation, stillness in general. And I know that that's a part of my dharma and something that like stillness is, I feel where my true gifts, like my true self resides when I'm in that place. And that's not necessarily everybody. But what I have found is that if you can create space to be still, to sit with yourself, because first of all, we don't have to look outside ourselves and, you know, ask the records right away when we're seeking an answer. There's so much within our bodies first. And so I would say first cultivate a connection with your body and begin listening to your body and listening to your heart and building those intuitive muscles and those connections, because it's through the heart that we access the Akashic records. And so it first starts with reconnecting with your heart and your heart space. And when have you sort of blocked that? Or I know so many people might feel like their heart has been wanting something else and has been pounding and asking them for whatever, to follow a different life experience or to follow different advice that they're holding within and they're not listening. So listening, like paying attention, hearing what it is, and then listening, because that demonstrates that you're showing up for yourself and you're making that connection even stronger. And of course, that can take time, right, for people, especially if you've been blocking that off for a really long time or disconnecting from your body. And a lot of people disconnect from their bodies from like various traumas throughout their lives. And of course, and so I would say if it helps to work with somebody to assist that process of reconnecting with your body, I would start there. And creating space for stillness, doing so in nature is like, I mean, exponentially can help you with that connection because we are nature. So it's kind of like plugging back into the grid that we were already born to be in. And so many of us are living outside of that grid of nature and we have disconnected ourselves. And that's, I mean, that's really the whole point about around my Feed Your Wild podcast, right? Is kind of like plugging us back into that wildness, that true wildness that we still hold and we're still a part of. So I feel like all of those aspects, any way that you can connect with nature, with water, with plants, with even just walking, being alone and tuning into those energies, all of that is going to sort of build that muscle of intuition that can then help support these messages to come through. And then one last thing, if you, in terms of a practice, if somebody's like, I'm doing all these things, then I would say begin to speak with your guides. Like actually have conversations, and I would say speak out loud. So if you're maybe embarrassed to do so in public or you know with loved ones, take some time by yourself and speak out loud to your guides and introduce yourself. They already know who you are, but introducing yourself just to sort of open up that conversation, asking them for inspiration or guidance or a sign, and you'll start to see how really we're so supported when we engage in that way. So I encourage anybody just to take those initial steps and see what unfolds for you.
I love that. And can you explain the guides a little bit more as well, just for someone who's not super familiar with that?
Sure. Yeah. So each of us has sort of like this support team that is in the unseen realms. We have so everybody will have something different to say about this. So I just want to mention also, take what resonates with you, right? And you can leave what doesn't. It's your life and your experience. So I just want to invite people to listen in that way. But the way that I have experienced it is like everybody has sort of like 3 to 5 main guides that are helping assist them in this life experience, like this lifetime. And there are various guides for different things. And some people, like when I've read people and I've mentioned sort of the qualities and the energies I'm getting from a particular guide, a lot of them will say, yeah, I have felt that. Like, or that I can't, that came to me in my dreams, or I've met a person like that and I felt this connection. So paying attention to, you know, when you feel like, oh, this was divine guidance, or I have been led, that there's an actual energy behind that and you can connect with that. And these are, I like to just use the words energies because I don't exactly know like what they are, right? And there are many different names than people can use with them. But there are spirit guides, there are angel guides. There, you know, depending on like what lineage or what you believe in, there's all these different terms. But I don't think any of that really matters so much as cultivating a connection with them, because they can really help support you. It's kind of like they help you make that right when you're at that fork in the road and driving. They'll lead you and nudge you to make that right-hand turn, maybe because that's going to lead you to something that's going to teach you in this lifetime, versus making a left-hand turn and then, you know, you get lost, you have to turn around and like all these things. So they're sort of part of your guidance system and your GPS, and you can also connect with them. But I would say it starts with just starting a conversation, and it might feel silly. Like if this is totally new to you, it might feel really silly and out there, but kids do it all the time. Like if you tune into how kids are playing and with their imagination, and a lot of them have imaginary friends, most of the time those are guides for them. as well, like with imaginary friends. And they're helping them cope in an area of their life. That's what I have seen. And so it's sort of re-engaging that connection that we all had when we came into this world that maybe we were kind of conditioned out of. And so I feel like that's one of the best things that we can start doing and starting to see some major shifts in our lives.
I love what you bring up about kids. It actually made me want to laugh out loud because I was just out paddleboarding with my daughter and she was being really quiet. And I was like, what are you thinking about? And she's like, I'm thinking about the house we're going to buy. And I was like, what?
Whoa.
Like, not that I know of. And she said, yeah. And I was like, well, what does it look like? And she's like, it's green. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
With you saying that, I was just like, wow, that's super funny. So we'll see.
Kids are so plugged in and we can learn so much. I mean, you know, obviously we're supposed to mature and grow up and, you know, have the various faculties that kids don't have access to, but we're not supposed to fully lose all that we had when we were children. So I always say, look to your kids, look at other children and see how they play, see how they engage with the world. And it's play, right? So much of it is play, and play is such a huge part of a healing journey, number one, to really bring in that energy of play and nourishment. I think play is such a huge aspect of nourishment, but also to soften the blocks and soften the walls that we have put up because we're not taking ourselves so seriously anymore.
Absolutely. So getting back into kind of nourishment too, what are your thoughts on cravings? When we talk about like food cravings or cravings for other things, what's your take on cravings?
Oh yeah, this is juicy. I feel like cravings are definitely signposts. And they tell you many different things. And I think it depends on obviously the person and what's going on for them. Some cravings are driven physiologically. Like, you know, I'll have clients who have bacterial overgrowth or candida overgrowth, and they're craving sugars and carbs, and people who it's more emotionally driven. So if you're not receiving a certain kind of like tender love or kindness, you might seek out that in foods. And so looking at what foods are you actually craving and what might that say about what it is that you're missing, whether it's on that physiological level that maybe can be tested, like, you know, are you deficient in like just amino acids or minerals, which is a huge source of cravings? Is there any overgrowth or things going on that are kind of taking over sort of that, you know, the brain-gut connection? So they're sort of taking over, hijacking your brain because they want to feed. Or is there something that like connecting in with your heart, like I mentioned earlier, and knowing that there's a hole in there for something and you're filling it with food? And what is that food that you're choosing? And that might be an indicator of what it is that you are missing in your life. And how can you fulfill that in your life without it being food and without it feeling like deprivation? So, there are so many ways that we can look at cravings, but I say start off with what you're actually craving, looking at that food and letting that food tell you the story of what it might be. And if it is something that is more in the physiological realm, then working with somebody who can do that digging with you, a practitioner who can help guide you and figure out what that might be. But yeah, I'm a huge proponent of working on all of these levels together because they're all important and they're all going to impact your health and lead to cravings. So, and just to kind of share a personal story around this, I noticed that there were certain moments in my life when I had this very specific craving of having dates with almond butter and apple, like a crispy red apple. It's very specific. And I was like, what is this about? You know, and here I'm I'm also a nutritionist, and I'm looking at, well, like, yeah, that makes sense. I'm usually deficient in these certain minerals, and like the dates have amazing minerals, and then there's the polyphenols, and, you know, just all of this stuff that I'm getting. I'm like, okay, okay, but there's definitely something beyond this. And so I started to track what was going on in my life, like how I was feeling, and when these cravings would come on. So I would say that's another really important thing to do, is to look at the patterns. Are there patterns here? And so what I noticed for me was when I felt like I wasn't having the kind of love that I wanted to experience, it was like, it's almost like it had to be on my terms, which is something that I worked through also many years ago, right? But I noticed that when I felt like I was deprived of that from maybe a partner at the time or whatever, like a friend, that I would go to it. And I realized, oh, this date and the apple and the it was a very balanced one, right? Like we got the fat, fiber, protein. But what I realized was it was like this perfect combination of sweet, salty, and like even the chew of it, the chew of the date and like the crunch of the apple, everything was in balance. And it was, but it was still like this rich sweetness. And that's what I felt like I had been missing in my life in those moments, was this really balanced, nourishing kind of love that brought a sweetness to my life. And that was like fresh. There was just like so many correlates here with what the food was providing to me that it was a major aha. And then eventually, after working with a lot of people, you know, with cravings and looking at what they're craving, and also with eating challenges too, and working with people, practitioners, as colleagues who focus solely on eating challenges, eating disorder. I don't like to call it disordered eating, really. I see it more as eating challenges. That they were seeing this and they saw patterns. So it's a really big thing to just start to look at that and ask the questions without judgment, because we could be so hard on ourselves when we, quote, give in to those cravings.
I love your perspective on that. I was recently kind of thinking about this, because with the whole low carb thing and like vilifying of like the sweet flavor, mm-hmm. Especially when you think of like Ayurveda and getting in the six different tastes, like I just wonder how that's going to show up for people. And I know like there's definitely that thing for craving carbs or craving sweetness. And oftentimes I think maybe we think of it just on like the first level of like, oh, I just must need something sweet, or maybe it, you know, maybe it's imbalanced in my microbiome. But then to think of it as like, are you missing love, or, you know, other experiences, I guess, or what's your take on that?
Yeah. Well, you know, if anybody's familiar with Deanna Minnick, she, love her work. I supported her for a little bit, so I got to be in on, like, I was a teacher's aide for one of her programs for practitioners a while back, and learning so much from her. But she has her own theories around sort of the like the popular diets that surface and then go back down and resurface in different ways, and how that correlates with what we might be experiencing as a collective. So I would encourage anybody who isn't familiar with Deanna Minnick just to check out her work and her Instagram. She always talks about these things. But yeah, I would say that, you know, there isn't, like I mentioned, one diet for everybody. And I feel like we also have the seasons of our lives as well as the actual seasons. I love Ayurveda, that you brought up Ayurveda, because in so many of these ancient traditions, it's really working with the understanding that we are nature and we have cycles and seasons, and we are plugged into whatever cycle and season of the environment that we're living in. So, and respecting that, respecting those cycles and those seasons. And I think that particularly in the Americas and the US, we have gotten so far off our natural path and our cycles and seasons that we're sort of flailing and questioning, like, well, what is good for us? What diets should we be eating? And it's because we're really no longer kind of plugged into back into that natural way of being. Even just like waking up with the sun and, you know, and going to bed and not having all of this blue lights like in the evening, right? That can mess up our hormonal cascade and all those things, our microbiome. I mean, there's so much more science coming out about all of that. So I feel like it starts there. As it relates to the keto diet, so I'm also working with a study group that's an actual study that's going on that's looking at the ketogenic diet for Alzheimer's and cognitive decline. So I see the value, you know, like I'm using that therapeutically also in my practice sometimes, but it's therapeutically. And I'm not saying that like the ketogenic diet is for everybody, but I do feel like there is a lot of wisdom that can be gleaned from actually trying it yourself. Like I literally have tried every diet that I've ever recommended because I want to know how it feels in my body. And I'm kind of like a little biohacker like that anyway.
I agree with you on that one. I am the same way. If it exists, I've probably tried it and I'd love to. Yeah.
Kind of yeah. I know. And so like I was raw vegan for like 2 years. I go hardcore with, this was a long time ago. Yeah. Ketogenic, you know, all the things. So I know how it feels and like also just paying attention to the body and how does that shift and change things in my body, my experience. But some people can thrive. I mean, there's also looking at, oh my gosh, there's so much here, right? We need to look at the individual. What is going on for them right now, physiologically and in their life? What is their lineage like at the genetic level? Where did their family come from? What did their ancestors eat? What environment did primarily their ancestors come from and like grew up in? And where are they now? Is it totally different? That's one of the things that I realized with my mom. Like my mom even knew, she had this intuition. She's like, I need to get back in sun. I want to move to the West Coast. I want to move south. We're like in Chicago, right? Where, I mean, I think everybody's vitamin D deficient now, but living in Chicago and any of like these realms that are a little further north and you have those harsher winters, it's like you're not getting the sun that you, as much sun as you need. Anyway, our family's from Puerto Rico, right? Like generations and generations. And then like before that, I did my own DNA mapping, like genetic testing. And so that's another way that you can start to pick up the clues of maybe where your genes are from, like your ancestors, if you don't have a connection to your ancestors or, you know, for whatever reason. I know a lot of my clients are adopted, so they just don't know. So just gaining bits and pieces of information that can help inform you of what might be an appropriate diet or food for your unique body and taking all of those considerations into account. I know it can be overwhelming, but again, starting with your curiosity and just connecting with your intuition, maybe working with somebody to help assist you if you feel like this, it's challenging for you.
Yeah. I love how you bring in kind of the ancestral nutrition, right? And can you explain a little bit more, dive a little deeper into that piece as far as really finding out what's in your lineage? I just find that so super interesting.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of different ways to look at it. And so I'll just speak to a couple of them. First is, well, you know, if you can track where your ancestors are from or like through a genetic mapping, although that's not always like a 23andMe type of thing, that's not always going to give you 100% accurate information. That's always shifting and changing, right? They're always adding to that. And it's also, the information is not as available for like people of color or native peoples. I mean, just like that's the fact of life when it comes to this, the gene stuff, because of the what they're able to track and like the genes that they have inputted and sort of the people that showed up and who are able to pay. So it's a lot about access. Okay. So all of that's a whole nother political thing, but all of that aside, it can still provide some clues. And so if you choose to do that or just tracking through maybe your family history, if your family knows and has all of that in their records, tracking where your family is from, because most people, if you're not Native American or from that lineage in the Americas, then you're from somewhere else. And so finding out where that is. And with the genes, when we're looking at, this is the way that I have been looking at my genetic profile, is first looking at the general region where like my ancestors are from. So for me, that's Puerto Rico. There's some in Africa, and then there's some in like the Mediterranean. So what would be considered Iberia? That's like Spain, southern Spain right now, and then starting to track what types of environments did those people inhabit? Like, what is that environment like? What was it like thousands of years ago? And what were the foods that were available? And am I able to access that as well? I mean, looking at all of that, it's clear that I need more sun, right? Because all those regions, it's like you're by the sea and you have sun. And that's something all my life, like I've wanted to move back to a place where it's like I get more sun and there's the ocean. So I feel like we intuitively have these feelings too. But then also looking at, well, what did they eat in those places, in those environments? Because when we're speaking about Ayurveda, I like to look at like, if we were to take bioregional Ayurveda, so taking the concept of Ayurveda, but then taking it out of India, right, and applying it to where are your ancestors from and where are you now? So I'm not going to eat a banana in the middle of winter in Chicago, because that's not, it's not a local food. It's not a food that is available or, you know, was ever available in the history of time in Chicago in the middle of winter, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's seeing food as information. It's information that you are inputting into your body. And it communicates with the information you are receiving from your environment. And so that's a very basic way to begin, is just eating seasonally and locally is a baseline where you can start. And not everybody can do that, but I feel like it's becoming more and more accessible. And then imagining what types of foods you had access, like your ancestors had access to. And so for me, that was a lot of fish and root vegetables. And so that's something that I have incorporated into my life as well. And we can go deeper. There's like also looking at your haplotype, but that kind of gets into the weeds. But all of that, as you start to, you know, go down the rabbit hole, all of that holds pieces, bits and pieces of information that you can add to, your consciousness around food and ways of living.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I love how you say basically seeing food as information. And could you dive into, this might go into the weeds too, but I love talking about like the energy of food, especially when it comes to nourishment. Could mm-hmm. you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I think this is something that it's really important, and I'm glad that you brought it up, because I feel like for the first time in human history, we have foods that we have created that aren't fully whole and natural, right? And so there, obviously there's like, there's been big movements to go back to eating whole foods, and just like even with whole foods, the like the store in general, looking at that. But when we start to look at the energetics behind food, it makes a huge difference when we're looking at whole food forms versus something that is man-made or has a ton of chemicals or has been growing in soil that is devoid of nutrients and is devoid of life, right? Because the microbiome in the soil. So looking at soil integrity and the life and the energy that is within that, that's then going to provide the energy and like the source of energy for what's growing in that soil. Are there chemicals that are being thrown on that? Is it GMO? Like all of these things we have to consider because it impacts the energetics, the energy behind the food. So when we're looking at energy, everything is made up of energy. In this physical realm, we know this, right, through like science and quantum theory and all of that right now. But so when we're looking at the energetics behind foods, we're looking at this living energy as well. Like what is contained within this food that will then feed my energy? And we see food. We quantify food in terms of energy, right? Calories is a form of quantifying energy. But we can look at energy beyond the quantification nutritionally and looking at what is the vibration that it's holding, this intelligence that it's holding. That's why wild foods are so powerful, because they contain this natural, vibrant energy and intelligence that then communicates with our energy and also on so many different levels, like our microbiome and our like just all of the cell receptors, in addition to the energetic component. So looking at that spectrum, sort of like that scale of foods where like the wild and as natural as you can get, it's going to have more of that living energy. And then the more you get toward the processed side of the spectrum, it's going to be devoid of that kind of energy. And that makes a huge impact on your energetic body, the health of your energetic body. So being able to really navigate that too. There's a lot more too when we start looking at in terms of energetics, which is a little bit different. Like in Ayurveda and traditional Chinese medicine, we might look at the energetics of a plant or a food and how that might fit with our constitution. But that's a little bit different than what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, I love that. And that's one thing I love thinking about and just being aware of is like the energy of the food you're eating. And I think by eating seasonally and locally and bringing in those pieces, the food just has a different energy. And I was talking with Jen Krasinski in a previous interview, and we were talking about microwaving and like how that changes the energy of what you're eating. And I think there's a lot of things like that, like the traditional food preparation even. And eating with people you love. And I think one thing I'd love to talk to you about, and I know you're passionate about as well, is bringing the love into medicine and into food. What are your thoughts around that?
Oh yeah. Well, I think that's sort of like a deeper aspect of looking at those energetics of food, because when we're growing something in, you know, nutrient depleted soil, or we're dousing it with chemicals and we're monocropping, we're not taking care of that with love. We're not connecting in with that, right? Versus going to the farmer's market and actually speaking to the person who grew that food and who cares for it and puts their love and their sweat into growing that food to feed you. And there is this unseen web, this connection of energy that when we plug in like that in that way, it nourishes us. And when we're devoid of that, it's so much is about this disconnection from that. That's when we can start to get sick. So it's not just about the, you know, that this food is devoid of nutrients. It's also that it's devoid of love. It's devoid of care and that energetic nourishment that we need, because it literally has cut itself out of the system, like out of this natural web of life, so to speak. And you know, so many ancients knew this. So many traditions, they have this in the way that they talk about food. And we've really gone so far away from that and kind of put science on this pedestal and looking at that as everything needs to be approved by science. And obviously I love science, right? Like, I'm a science geek too, but science is not my God. And I see how science is a beautiful thing that is also supposed to be a tool to help us along with all of these other ways of connection and ways of knowing that we have as our right as human beings and these spiritual beings having an embodied experience. But yeah, I hear you with like all the different ways that we can alter and shift the energies, like microwaving. It makes a really big impact.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love how you bring up like all the tools. And I think you do a beautiful job at incorporating so many different tools on so many different levels into your work. Kind of as we're nearing the end of the interview, do you want to bring anything else to kind of the conversation about nourishment? Or what would be like the take-home tips for people to really nourish themselves, not only like through food, but in all the other ways you were talking about as well?
Yeah. Well, I want to plug a little bit of, I have this free program, and just because I created it because I had so many people, clients coming to me, asking me these types of questions and having blocks around certain things. And so I created this program and then I made it totally free because it's like I wanted people to have access with this. And really it's just a starting place, right? It's kind of like that starting place where you can open up a window and then go through that window and start to explore these various areas of your life with regards to nourishment and blocks around that. It's called Wildly Unstuck. And I go through sort of five of the biggest blocks that I see coming up for people and how to begin to navigate that and look at that within your own life. So that's on my website. If anybody's interested in signing up for that, it's wildlyrooted.com/unstuck.
And I'll totally link that up in the show notes too.
Awesome. Great. Yeah. So that's just a way if you're curious and you want to try, totally free, you could sign up. And then it's a self-guided audio program. It's like a for real program. So there's like six modules and each one has like a 30-minute audio guiding me guiding you through this process. So hopefully that's helpful for anybody who's interested in that. But in terms of really where to start, I would say it begins with the connection to self, because guaranteed your body, your heart are already telling you the messages. They hold the messages that you are looking for. It's within you already, no matter what anybody says. And you don't have to look outside of yourself. Of course, it's helpful to work with people. I do all the time. But don't allow that to negate anything that's coming from within. So I would say cultivating that practice of tuning into your heart, tuning into your body, making that connection like we talked about earlier, creating space for that. So actually maybe carving it out in your calendar, because I know that for me, I get so busy and wrapped up with like work and stuff that you just kind of forget. Or if you're a busy mama with kids and you're working, you literally have to build it into your schedule. So this week, in your calendar, select a day and a time, maybe take an hour out for yourself. Choose a place to go that feels resonant for you. Maybe it's like your favorite garden or park or space in your home. Make it really cozy and yummy. And then just sit with yourself. Maybe journal, like light a candle, make it super yummy. And that like something you're looking forward to, like a date that you're looking forward to. And make that a regular practice. Maybe it's not every day, maybe it's every week or it's every month, but the more that you can begin to cultivate that, then you'll start to hear the messages that you have. Like, I can't tell you how many times I have worked with clients and I'll give them messages from the records and they were like, I really kind of knew this already, but I haven't been paying attention. And it was helpful for somebody to say it in a different way, but guaranteed you have these messages within. So I would say start there, cultivate that time for yourself, because it's one of the most important things you could do.
Oh, I love that. And what a perfect way to end. My very last question for you is, what's one thing you do consistently for self-care?
Ooh, well, it changes. I feel like a lot of my practices change and are dynamic. But one thing that stays pretty much the same is my meditation practice. And that, the way that looks can shift and change. But I always have my meditation in the morning, every day. And right now, the way that that looks is opening up my records, meditating, and then journaling and doing some free journaling for myself and just everything that wants to come through there. So it's a different way that I'm engaging with these messages and incorporating my body along with it, like by writing. But right now that's like been making massive shifts in my life experience, more than I anticipated. So I highly encourage people to do that too.
Thank you so much for being with me on the podcast today. I will link up everything. Also put in your amazing website, which is absolutely beautiful. And your course, which I have done, and I would highly, highly recommend checking out Feed Your Wild on your favorite listening platform as well.
Thank you so much for listening to Nourish and Shine. I hope that you enjoy this episode and that you'll leave me a review on iTunes so that more people can hear the podcast. I'd also love to connect with you on social media. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I would love to hear your questions, so please send them my way. Also, you can check out my website. It's amysopola.com. I hope that today's interview provided you with some inspiration and practical advice to nourish your mind, body, and spirit, optimize your health, and to live a whole, vibrant life. Please join me again next week for another amazing interview. Have a wonderful week. The information provided on this podcast is for educational purposes only. It's not intended to diagnose or treat any disease or condition. Please do not apply any of this information without first speaking with your medical provider.